Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Prestige film. Today, we're talking about the 1983 film Risky Business. Recently won the Patreon poll for which prestige film we should record. It's a 1983 teen sex comedy. Gotta love your teenage sex comedies.
Yeah, I would as a teenager.
It's a different experience watching it as a father of teenager, mm-hmm. as a teenager. It's written and directed by one Paul Brickman, who honestly didn't do much before or after this. He was kind of famous for writing the script to one of the sequels to The Bad News Bears, and then he hit it out of the park with this one and hasn't done much since. It stars, of course, Tom Cruise and Rebecca De Mornay. It also stars Joey Pants, Joe Pantoliano, or Pantoliano. Thank
you. You're close enough.
I need the real Italian tongue to handle that one. Also, I was delighted to find out it stars Bronson Pinchot.
Right. Who we just recently watched in that Tarantino shit, the one he wrote but didn't direct.
Oh, yeah, with Christian Slater. Yeah. What was that called? Wild something or other?
I keep wanting to say Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It's
but
not.
It's not it.
But that one.
Yeah.
Of course, he's best known for playing Cousin Balky. Yes. Perfect Strangers. Don't Be Ridiculous. Oh, it's and kind of an interesting thing of Kismet, our pal Anthony's launching a podcast called Perfect Stranger Things. It's a Stranger Things retrospective and look at 80s pop culture. There you go, Bronson Pinchot. It also stars Curtis Armstrong, who you might know as Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. I was also delighted to find out he voiced Ezekiel the Cockroach on HBO's Doom Patrol. I had no idea he was still working, and I had no idea he was in one of my favorite things in the last 2 years. I have never seen this film, Jim. You know, teenage raunchy sex comedies, not a big thing in my house growing up.
I bet.
Not one of those things also where it's like one of those things where like, I need to get, it's one of the classics, one of the greats, although it is.
It has that scene.
It has that scene. And I was waiting and I was shocked that it comes right up front.
Right?
Tom Cruise shaking his ass in underwear. Yeah.
We got to talk about that later.
Rocking out to the old time rock and roll. Mm-hmm. What did you think of this movie here, Risky Business?
I've seen a lot of movies like this since. Mm-hmm. You know, I got out from under the parental thumb. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this is the best of them that I've seen, but I was, let's say, delighted by the surprises that this movie has. I think this movie is utterly unbelievable. It's almost to a farce level of ridiculousness. But like, I don't know. I've seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's this, but much better.
And more adult.
Certainly more adult. But 3 years later, you know, it's an evolution of this. So you got to give this credit as being before that. I don't know. It was fun. It went to places I didn't expect this movie to go. And that was what kept me engaged in watching.
Yeah, and plus it's noteworthy of being this is kind of Tom Cruise's breakout role. He was squeaky clean, 21-year-old. I know he'd done work before, but this is the one that kind of made him a household name. Good early work by Rebecca De Mornay, which I don't know if I mentioned I forgot to mention all the stuff she's been in, but you might have seen her in Backdraft, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Wedding Crashers. She's recently on Marvel's Jessica Jones.
Okay.
I have not seen a lot of these. Like, I haven't seen, you know, Wet Hot American Summer, American Pie.
Oh, no.
A lot of the raunchy teenage comedies I still haven't gone around to see.
Euro Trip, just like,
tons
of these in the late 90s.
Sure. And I missed every single one of them. I was surprised by a couple things. Number one, you're right. It is a farce. It's a satire. Like, I think of, you know, when you think of this was the era of Wall Street and what was the ABC with Michael J. Fox, Family Ties, like the young Republican, everything motivated by business and greed. And
I couldn't get that out of my head during this movie. Yes.
That it had a lot of kind of lampooning of that culture, like that's kind of still effective, like bro startup culture. It's ahead of its time. I was also surprised that it's eroticism.
Is it like, well, I maybe we don't need to talk about it right up front here before we get into what the movie's about, but like, I have questions about whether this is a satire or whether this is feeding right into the Wall Street cocaine, fuck it all, burn, like, this isn't is all Poe's, just money, yeah, life that, is money, let's do this thing.
Isn't that Poe's law, like, the closer you get to on-target parody, the more it becomes indistinguishable from a earnest version of the thing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. But
yeah, I was also surprised by the eroticism of this film. I was not ready for, like, hot sex and fantasy sequences.
The nudity, the sexuality, right up front. It just slams you with that.
And it also subverts it. So, like, you know, there had been some steamy scenes before, but then when, like, you know, she's been promising this, like, sex on a train, and then Phil Collins in the Air Tonight starts up, and I'm like, I got some expectations, and suddenly Tom Cruise is trying to get it on, looking into the eyes of this train bum, who's like, okay, I'm getting a show tonight on the train. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it. It's weird because, like, it also, like, you know, as an adult, I watch this and I see, you know, how unrealistic it is.
Yes.
I also, like, start doing the math. Like, it was clever that they established that Tom Cruise is an old high school senior. He's a 19-year-old.
Yeah, he is about ready to go to college.
He's a legal adult, so there's nothing statutory here. Some of his friends are not 18.
Yeah, they certainly don't look it.
And some of that feels a little uncomfortable. It's funny because, like, I feel like I just happened to see Licorice Pizza over the break, and that features a love affair between a 15-year-old and a 25-year-old, which I found similarly kind of, you know, uncomfortable and weird. I kind of feel like we ought to do The Graduate pretty soon, because then I could, you know, it's like, yeah, I just want to see all the weird, kind of like older women taking advantage of boys type of movies to see what I think about them. But I liked it. I thought it was funnier. It was funnier than I expected. It was sexier than I expected. It has a great soundtrack. This, like early 80s techno by Tangerine Dream, with a lot of really smart pop culture reference. Like I said, Phil Collins in there tonight. Fucking song's a banger, man. When the Sonos started singing with the...
It's like, I was disappointed by what they're showing when they do that. Because, like, it is iconic. I mean, that moment in music is one of the most iconic moments in music, period.
Yeah.
And to use it to just shoot an external shot of a train slowing down into a station did not hit me the way I was hoping for that song to hit.
Mm-hmm. I would lie if I didn't say it. As soon as this movie is over, I queued up that song and listened to it. Just like, man, that fucking sounded so good on my hi-fi setup. And I'm like Tom Cruise's dad. I got the EQ set right. I cranked it. Yeah.
That came solo era.
Flying into my underwear and my sunglasses.
Tidy whiteys, or have you updated your look?
Oh yeah, I mean the tidy whiteys. I left those in the '80s. I'm into the boxer briefs now.
Good,
but yeah, I liked it. What else do we want? I mean, I suppose this is the point where we should tell the people what this movie's about. I mean, I'm sure many people have seen it. You've certainly seen the Tom Cruise dancing naked to old time rock and roll.
Yeah, shaking like a landed fish in his couch.
I was surprised how long the movie stayed on that scene. Like, there's a lot to that scene. Like, Tom Cruise is like really fucking busting a move.
More it's than you think of the video. Iconic stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not just him sliding into the da 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 da.
Like, they almost needed to pair the Phil Collins song with the moment where he slides in. And that would have been iconic enough to make it happen for me.
I would like
me,
to see him play air drums in there tonight.
Yeah. That'd be
cool. So this movie is about Tom Cruise. He is a 19-year-old about to graduate high school, kid named Joel. His parents are upper middle class, living in one of the swankier suburbs, in the Home Alone suburb of Chicago. And he is on the short track to a Ivy League education. He's in the Young Entrepreneurs Club. He's got his finals coming up. All he's got to do is keep his nose to the grindstone, get through this week. His buddy orders him a sex worker. that leads to him running a brothel, an unlicensed brothel, out of his parents' home.
While they're on vacation.
While they're on vacation.
A vacation that seems to last about 6 months in this movie.
It is. I think it's a single week, but it does feel like it lasts a good long time. And yeah. it's pivotal moment in this guy's life. There's a misunderstanding with the pimp. I don't know if it's a misunderstanding. There's a situation with the pimp.
Yep.
There's some unexpectedly high stakes. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, I thought that, like, in the first third of this movie, I kind of settled in for, like, oh, this is going to be kind of this romp. And then suddenly there's a little bit of element of danger. And I also thought Rebecca De Mornay's character, Lana, does a really good job of kind of, like, subverting the, you know, the hooker with the heart of gold. You expect her to, like, take pity on this young boy. Yeah. But she kind of mercilessly takes advantage of him throughout the movie in ways that I didn't think ever felt unfair. I'm like, you dumb fuck rich kid. You kind of deserve this.
Have we fully said what the movie's about? Because I'm itching to talk about Tom Cruise in this movie.
Oh yeah, that's it. That's just like, is he? Okay. Will he resolve the various situations he's got himself into before his parents come home? Will he still be? Will his parents arrive with his? You know, yeah. Is he gonna maintain his career? Is he gonna maintain his? Yeah, blah blah blah.
Yeah. So you talked about Rebecca.
Spoilers
De Mornay.
From here on out.
She doesn't really like unfairly take advantage of him because of how colossally, like, foundationally, inhumanly, profoundly dumb they make Tom Cruise at the beginning of this movie. It's
so he's
astonishing.
A teenage boy, you're saying?
No. Get your kid in, give him a microwave meal and see what he does with it in the kitchen, because there is a scene, the scene right before the iconic Tom Cruise unpacks a Hungry Man meal or whatever from the freezer, sits down at his dining room table pretending to be an adult, picks up a frozen block of potatoes.
It is frozen,
and gravy,
right?
A literally frozen block, and tries to eat it like a popsicle. He is so fucking stupid.
I wasn't sure if he had burnt it or, like, what were they trying to say? Because, like, surely he's not so stupid, but
does not understand the concept of temperature in this movie.
worse, he's taken Chivas Regal and poured it into Coke.
That might be worse. Yeah.
You know, this, you don't make a Jack and Coke with scotch, son. What the hell?
Dude, it almost saves the movie in a way, how colossally dumb he is by having this microwave dinner meal scene.
Yeah.
Because the ways that Lana?
Yeah, it's Lana.
Takes advantage of him couldn't be done to anyone else. Mm-hmm. Anyone even 4 brain cells smarter,
right,
ends up calling her bullshit, calling the cops, something.
Yeah.
But in this movie, he is just colossally dumb.
And he's got this, like, urge to bust loose. Like, you got the idea that his parents have kept him very, you know, much on task and unfocused, and they're very demanding. And
but he's still not even that. Like, his GPA isn't very good. And, like, he's not able to get by.
His business idea is, like, Sky Mall level of, like, like bad Sky Mall. Like, maybe not as bad as, like, the copper anti-arthritic bracelets.
Sure,
but, like,
sure. Not full-on scam, but
yeah, it's off to solve a problem that no one has ever had.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which, given last weekend, seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Yeah, it's just, man, he's dumb. And the movie can't do enough in the week that his parents are gone for me to actually believe that his stupidity has been remedied and that he could hang at Princeton. I assume like he'd be okay because his parents are wealthy, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
The kid isn't going to starve, but the kid's too dumb to really do anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the, I think, satirical aspects is like the idea that there's nothing this rich, privileged kid could do to really ruin his life.
Yeah.
And even the ways he ruins his life are seen as attractive go-getter, like by the Princeton. And then that was weird because like I thought that what he was going to do is like finesse this guy, like, hey, take one of these ladies, have a good time on me, blah, blah, blah. And like kind of like lean into corruption. But apparently this recruiter came over there, saw this entire milieu of the 16-year-olds getting it on with the 40-year-old streetwalkers and all, like, and like, you know what? This is the kind of material we need at Princeton. And it's kind of like that, like nothing. This is a much ado about nothing situation. Nothing bad happens to Tom Cruise. Like there's so many terrible things that could have happened.
Yeah.
And nothing does. Like, he even runs into a pimp with a heart of gold who kind of, like, fucks with him more than he actually does anything real to him.
Yeah, he's no worse for wear at the end of this, certainly.
Literally,
he's better for wear.
His mom's egg's cracked, and...
And he's got to pay it off, but...
Right.
The other thing about that is, like, it's hilarious to me that his mom is so worried about this egg to the point where, like, he's worried for his life, I think, at some point, if the egg doesn't get returned. His parents are going to kill him, literally. And then when she comes home and she sees it is cracked, she's like, "Oh, I'm so angry." And the dad's like, "Well, we'll make Tom Cruise buy you another." And I'm like, "Well, if these can be bought off the shelf at fucking Macy's, who gives a shit if it's cracked? This lady is making too much of a deal of this."
Yeah.
But I guess it's like, it's a particular type of egg, and yes, there are more, but it's probably very expensive.
It's not like a Fabergé. It's like a...
No, it's like a cut glass. Solder or something.
I looked it up, and it's like from a famous like glassworks company.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that you would, if you watched Antiques Roadshow or something, you'd probably know, but I don't
know. But it's kind of off the shelf. It's not a one of a kind. I thought this was handmade and like by Italian artisans or something. It's like, nah.
It looks like what you get at a flea market for $20.
Yeah.
You know, you put it in your front yard. It's a reflecting ball. It's a pink flamingo. It's a it's a piece of glass, man.
Honestly, looks like a kind of not a tchotchke, just kind of a thing.
Tom Cruise does go through a little bit of an arc because in the beginning of this movie, he's kind of a pushover. Like he's aimless. Yeah. He's, you know, connected and doing this, that, and the other, and I think the movie wants you to think he's smart, although it does a good job of blowing that up after the first 5 minutes. But like there's this like, you know, he is also just extremely repressed.
Yeah,
like this kid is so sexually repressed that his sex dreams he can't get off in,
right?
Because like he gets in a hot steamy and then like the door leads to his exam office where he's going to flunk out, or it leads like, what's the other, he's having a fantasy and like
his cops bust in
and raid him. Like this guy is so repressed, and like it's a running joke where like he's trying to pass off like, oh yeah, I had this opportunity, and his friends just don't even believe him. To this guy who is a pimp, you know, like to the point where like his friends come over to like borrow his room to have sex because he's not using it.
Yeah,
you know, like
that's just going to waste.
That's gross, right?
Oh, I wouldn't like, let a
your
friend
buddy
have sex
hot bunk in your bed.
No
switching the sheets or nothing. Just, yeah. Like, if I got a moldy couch in my parents' basement, maybe you can use that. But my bed? My bed?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm with you.
I thought, so I was wondering when the iconic, like, this is, man, this feels a lot like Home Alone. Or maybe maybe it does that intentionally because Chris Columbus is like, you know, having Macaulay Culkin dance and sing and like,
yeah.
But him breaking loose from his parents' grip felt a lot like early stage Home Alone. That sequence was a hell of a lot of fun. I thought it was going to be like, you know, like the 10 second gag, but it's pretty much the entire song. And legend has it that Tom Cruise improvised all of that stuff.
Nice.
And he does a pretty convincing like splits.
Tom Cruise been doing good couch work since the early 80s.
Yeah, this couch got pile drive so he could dance on Oprah's. Yeah.
No, you're right. I expected this scene to come later in the movie, though, like more celebratory. But I feel it, right? I feel this scene as a kid, a guy who used to be a teenager. Every time your parents left the house, it was just like, my kingdom.
It felt like your world's full of possibilities. Like, right? I am. It is. It's like, it is very Home Alone-y that, like, as soon as your parents leave you in charge, it's like all the fucking unlimited. It feels like, even though it's not, especially, you know, you and I lived out kind of in the country, the like southern Indiana suburbs, but it feels like it feels like you could do anything.
It does. They do some good work there. I think later they sort of undermine the stuff that they're doing here that feels totally relatable and real. They do some stuff that feels the exact opposite later, but I think, yes, this part is very good, and it's iconic for a reason, because everyone feels that.
Yeah. We joked a little bit about this guy's junior businessman class or whatever, their final project is where they're trying to make, you know, money, real-world money. Mm-hmm. And this memo box, I talked about it, Sky, because, like, I love SkyMall. That was my favorite part about flying, is, like, getting it and, like, looking at all the pages and, like, seeing, like, because some of this stuff was, like, legitimately cool. They had, like, you know, usually it's, like, licensed merch and stuff. But some of this stuff is, like, you know, solutions in search of a problem. And this, it's, like, it's a piece of paper, and you hit a button, and it flashes to let you know you wrote a piece of paper. And
we're talking about an era that almost certainly had answering machines, correct?
No, his mom leaves him a message.
Oh, Christ, you're right.
at one point. So, like, this is
useless.
It feels like that SkyMall where, like, you would probably sucker in enough people to sell 1,000 of them for $9.99.
Still people who can't afford
the cost of $1.83.
Answering machine, the high-tech answering machine in that day. Yeah.
Yeah. And you probably would lie about its features. It'd probably be like high-tech digital circuitry to, like, you know, and
sure,
then you get it,
sure,
and it's like, oh, it just
two
flashed.
LEDs on it.
Just
switch.
Two LEDs and a voice chip that says memo, memo, memo. But, yep, like, it's exactly the kind of thing these idiots would come up with.
And that's the thing. They do a pretty good job early on painting Tom Cruise, like I said, as being profound, staggeringly stupid.
Yeah.
But also
mediocre,
being profoundly distracted by chasing women, right?
Yeah.
Like the repression is manifesting in ways that are holding him back. Not unlike his other friends who are scoring, who are getting it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're all studying for their exams, they're all getting admitted to Ivy League schools, but he's held back because he's so obsessed with the neighbor. He's obsessed with the sex that he's not having.
Yeah. Yeah. To the extent that he can't sleep.
Yeah.
Like there's that, it's like his libido is burning a hole in his pocket or something like that. And,
I'll tell you, if you can't sleep,
yeah,
you might not want to put a Chex Cashed, Kenny Rogers roaster type sign right above your bed, flashing red lights every.
It was definitely Roxanne needed to turn off that red light because it was definitely. I mean, they do lay on some of that stuff a little thick,
for sure.
But in a way, I thought was kind of entertaining. Then there's a scene where Booger, you know, decides. That's the other thing, is like this guy has no agency for so much of this. In fact, a lot of this movie. Like, he's forced into things. The only thing he does of his own free will is call Lana.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Booger calls up a pro for him, and turns out it's a trans... Like, I couldn't tell if this scene was more racist or transphobic. It's probably equal amounts of both.
Sure, it's the 80s. Equal opportunity for racism.
But I also felt like... I mean, of course, you know, I'm not the authority. But I also thought, like, in retrospect, it had... it wasn't a, because like they make it clear that Tom Cruise is just being an unimaginable asshole and this lady is overlooking like egregious behavior and also milking him.
Yeah.
You know, like she's going to get her full freight for showing up here.
Rightfully so, I think. Like, yeah. You wasted the person's time. You give them the gas money. You give them money for their time.
Yeah. And I thought, like, you know, like, it's one of those things where, like, I thought it was going to be like, oh, sweetie, I'm not what you expected. It's no problem. But, like, no, she makes him pay and then says, hey, I know what you white boys around the lake want because they all want the same thing. And it turns out it's Rebecca De Mornay, which.
Well, turns out it's. I think this is more like an operation they're running, right? Because she comes in and she steals the egg. She's a thief. She's
but was she, a con was she artist. Done that if he paid her? Because like I feel like that
he does pay her, right? He goes and gets the bonds.
Some
and comes
hours
back.
Later, he comes back. But like I think she's already like, probably just gonna bounce with the
maybe she just didn't trust that he actually.
And
had
also
the cash.
Like what you're gonna leave a sex worker in the 80s alone in your parents'
house.
Upper middle class house like
for
come
fat
on.
Like I said staggeringly stupid.
There's a lot of funny scenes. Like there's a lot of like where I thought they were going to get up to Ferris Bueller type action. Like the first time he pulls out with the Porsche.
Yep.
And it's playing.
And they
play
do,
the cool music.
They smooth it all over by the end.
And then he kills it. He stalls it, pulling out, and the music stops.
Yeah, that was clever.
And
I liked it.
It turns back up, and then the music starts back. Like, right back on, and it. Yeah, I like those little touches leading up to like because like this is the first like act of the movie. And then, like, Rebecca De Mornay is a bomb that goes off. She shows up, and it's like, at first I thought it was another sex fantasy.
Me too.
Because the door knocks, and she just kind of comes in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it is a little, like, magical realism. Like, Tom Cruise sees her, and the door blows open, and the it's extremely, like, romanticized eroticism.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, sex. They imply it, like, all night long. Like, the TV stations are turning off.
Yeah.
You know, they're like a kids. You didn't, if you didn't know, back in the old days, TV would just call it quits. Like you get to be what, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, sometimes earlier on weeknights. And they'd be like, you know what? Go to fucking bed.
Get
we're
the
done.
Pattern. Yep.
Here's the Pledge of Allegiance. Here's the flag. We'll see you in like 6 hours. And I kind of wish the internet did that.
The internet sleep.
Yeah, the internet would like at two. Okay, like if I'm in a 2 minute in, a two a.m. insomnia session, I'm just mindlessly you know browsing Reddit or Twitter. I wish like at 2 o'clock my
Jesus,
router would be like.
Man, that's like.
You know what? It's been a long day. Playing we're playing the national anthem, raising the flag. It's start again at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know.
that's Chinese firewall levels of monitoring and control and just like technological
and I need it
control like
yeah
because then you'd have to gate different time zones at different actual daytimes.
I guess like, it's easier when you have terrestrial transmitters in the time zone that you know changed in the last 40 years where we became a 24/7 society. I don't think like I've seen a lot written about that, but like we went like when I grew up the TV turned off. A lot of places are still closed on Sundays, certainly closed early on Sundays.
Money
nobody
never
was
sleeps,
open.
Man.
Nobody's open on Thanksgiving or Christmas. Like, what the hell happened?
Isn't
that
a Wall
Street
slogan? Money never sleeps.
I think that's,
I think it's exactly what it is. Wall Street happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Decided like you can, whoever decided that they're going to stay open is going to make some more money. And
but ironically, Wall Street still abides by the.
That's true.
9:30 to 4.
Those fuckers. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Banker's hours.
Unless you're on, you know, certain brokerages and then you get the extended hours and then you can trade globally and you get. Yeah.
After hours trading, baby. Even they've gotten into it.
Sure. I want to talk about some of the filmmaking aspects of this and the storytelling aspects of this movie. Cause I think there's good and bad here to be had. The filmmaking stuff is interesting because I think they start off strong. They're like you said, that scene where he pulls out of his father's garage in the Porsche and the music stops when the car stalls.
Very funny.
That's nice. That's a good touch. There's the steamy bathroom scene where he's seeing his naked neighbor and fantasizing about her.
Yeah.
And the bathroom appears to like grow longer and longer as it gets steamier and he tries to find his way to her. I thought that was a cool effect. And then when his parents are leaving, there's an escalator shot, which is like a one-er, where his dad never breaks eye contact with the camera the entire shot, and he's going backwards up an escalator and then getting off that escalator and going around a corner, and I'm like, how the fuck did this actor pull this off? And then I saw, like, the mother is leading him. But still, it's not easy. And it was just a really cool effect and a cool shot.
What did you think of the... Because, like, the movie takes a turn. Like, it's like, kind of, like, funny and, you know, sexy and, like, teenage wish fulfillment. And then it gets to a point where Tom Cruise and Cousin Balky track Lana down to a swanky like hotel restaurant and kind of like, you know, give her the eye, like, I know you got my egg. And she decides, like, oh, I'm gonna fuck with these kids again. And then her pimp shows up, played by a 32-year-old Joey Pants. That's what I started this whole fucking thing, so I didn't have to ever say his last name.
Yeah, Joey Pants.
Who, by the way, looks like Nick Cage out of Face Off.
I would say he's...
Right? The facial... like he... And in fact, yes, he might have had a facial reconstruction deal.
Oh, Nick Cage as Sean Archer in Face Off?
Yeah. The haircut, the bow... Like, it's... There's something cagey about his face.
Oh, okay. He's still... Yeah, he's still... what's his name? Yes, he is only recognizable, in my opinion, by his voice.
Yes.
Because his... That has not changed, but his face is totally different now.
Yeah, and it's not like he was ugly before and he's good looking now or vice versa. Yeah, he's like, it's just fine. Different. He's really changed as he's gotten older.
Yeah, maybe he filled out into his nose or something.
I don't know.
But at 32, you would think he'd filled out already, right?
Yeah, he hit the human growth hormone before the Matrix or what? I don't know.
I guess so.
But
Fugitive, because he looks Joey Pants in Fugitive.
And he shows up and he adds menace.
Legitimately.
He's a pretty good job of like playing some kind of Scarface type character, you know. Mm-hmm. He might be mobbed up, he's connected, his name's Guido, like, you know,
Guido,
he's got
the pimp.
He's got this the suit, and he pulls out a gun, he starts threatening them. And they'll go in his car chase. It's, I think, some kind of Lincoln or Cadillac versus this Porsche 928.
Yeah, right. Right. The first corner they hit, they're gone.
Yeah,
they're fucking
gone.
Yeah,
yeah. And I felt like this car chase is like, I've seen a lot of good car chases lately, and this was not one of them.
This is one of the more unbelievable things in the movie.
And it's not funny. It's also just like, we're just going to do a straight up car chase. We're just not going to exit. They're not going to be very compelling character. Not going to be very compelling vehicles. And it's not going to be done kind of poorly.
They're trying to do something with Booger here in the back where he's like, I'm going to throw up. No, I'm going to throw up on you, Joel. It's not very funny.
No.
Not super exciting.
It's the only part of the movie that felt kind of tedious.
Yeah.
But then it's like, you know, Rebecca De Mornay talks him into letting her stick. Because, you know, obviously she's been thrown out. She's fallen out with her pimp and she's got his egg back. And like him being like having to go to school and say, you know, it's like, hey, just don't steal anything. And I thought that was a really great building of tension that, you know, you got him at the school just watching the clock go and they kept cutting back to her just casing the place.
Yeah.
Like going through all their shit, seeing all the stuff she could steal essentially. Until they get to like where it's like a few seconds before and what does he say? He's like, come the fuck on when the bell will ring at the end of it. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, it is. Things get weird here though with like, you know, we talked about how stupid he is, but come on. I mean, like, he's also gullible. He's also very gullible. He's taken in by this woman who he wants to be his girlfriend or whatever. And there's just a lot of weird stuff. Like, he doesn't ask when he catches back up with her and they have the Porsche chase and they end up back at his place. He doesn't ever ask about the egg until like halfway through the next morning. Like, they've eaten breakfast. They're doing all these things. And the whole point of tracking her down was to get this egg. And he's just totally distracted by, I don't know, the sex they had that night or something. It's like, God, you're so stupid. You are so stupid.
And that's what it is. Like, it makes me wonder, like, was that him driving down there more to get the egg back? Or was it more to, like, get her back? Because he's also, like, full on impressed, like, trying to impress the shit out of her by how fast he drives a Porsche and by like the fact that he doesn't back down from this pimp and, you know.
I don't know. There's just a lot of things that didn't add up.
He loses the plot a bit. He smokes a joint. He wears some just really terrible jorts.
Oh, my God, some yes. Cut-offs.
Like, Tom Cruise is a very attractive man, can pull off about anything.
And he's in excellent shape in this movie, too.
You know, crop top outfits and Top Gun, no problem.
Yeah.
These jean shorts are, cut-off jean shorts are the worst.
Right.
It's like someone went to Walmart, got an off-the-rack Wranglers, and just cut them poorly, not even the same length. And
they were probably Oshkosh, that's what I'm thinking.
They're bad. They're bad.
Yeah.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club. But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time. For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
But none of, like, again, it's much ado about nothing, because like they set up Joey Pants to be this kind of violent pimp. Doesn't menace anyone. By the time he shows up at the end of the film, where he's cleaned out his house, like it's almost like a guy. It almost feels like him, like one of those Soprano scenes where like Tony's fucking with somebody. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm intimidated shit out of this guy because I'm a gangster, but I don't really care.
Yeah,
and it's kind of funny to me. But like the idea that like Joel is actually going to get hurt, or even Rebecca De Mornay, because like she's curious. I wonder if I watch this again, if I get the opinion that like they're in on it.
I think so. I think
are they? Because she's never that really intimidated by him. She's calling him stupid, even during the high speed stage. She's hanging out the window, like shining him on and all. Like,
and then at the end, there's the train sex distraction, which is clearly a distraction, but it isn't intentional.
And she's the one that suggested, like, oh, don't you want to have sex on a train? Like, I don't want to have sex.
And that's
on
when
a
Joey
Amtrak.
Pants,
like, no. Right?
And that's when Joey Pants comes in and steals everything.
That's
so you get the impression that it is definitely a distraction that's intentional, But he asks her that straight up and she denies it. But but he's so gullible and stupid. I'm not believing that. I don't believe it in the moment.
And
but
I never
then
feel...
there's a weird switcheroo at that moment too, where he's like, well, I'm going to Princeton anyway, so I guess this is our last night together. So what does it matter if it was an intentional thing? And they go off and have another ice cream together or something.
Yeah. And I wonder, because there's a couple points where, like, I wondered if I was a younger man, if I would turn against Rebecca De Mornay because the shameless way she's taken advantage of, like, where the Porsche rolls in through the water. I've never heard this sound come out of Tom Cruise's voice, like this, like, kind of like panicky teenage scream. You locked the door. The keys are outside. As he's desperately trying to keep this Porsche from rolling into Lake Michigan. And of course, it does. But like,
of course,
I never once felt sorry for Joel, and I was always like, "Yeah, fuck this kid," you know, like this guy is an ATM with no limit.
Because
the other thing. Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say this is where the movie lets me down, because I have seen a movie like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because Tom Cruise is Cameron in this movie, and everything happens to him identically. He gets taken advantage of by his friends who push him down these paths he doesn't want to go down. His car gets totaled. His dad's car gets totaled. Mm-hmm. But crucially, and this is actually good storytelling in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, there's a moment of growth that spurs a character to grow and to accept responsibility for their own life. Yeah. In this movie, it's just totally washed away by the end.
Yeah.
He makes the money to fix the car. The car comes back.
He's in a better situation.
Squeaky clean.
Than
his dad gives him a hug and loves him.
Yeah. His mom's pissed. Right? And I'm thinking like, oh, this is where you're going to see how bad his home life is, where nothing like, you know, like, God, you left your kid alone and he didn't do it. Like, as far as you know, he didn't do anything. And there's a small crack in your egg and you're going to throw a shit fit about how irresponsible he is. Jesus Christ. But then, and then I thought it's like the other shoe's going to drop with his dad. But then it's like, not a Princeton guy bought your shit hook, line, and sinker.
Right? And he gets all his furniture back. He is no worse for wear. And I feel like that is the major shortcoming of this movie as compared to something like Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And like the other thing I thought would be, it'd feel creepy about this teenage boy with this sex worker. But they make it very, like I said, they show his date. Like his parents got him a bearer's bond when he was born. And it was like, I did the math. I'm like, oh, he's 19. But not only that, like, Rebecca De Mornay is only like a year or two older than Tom Cruise. And it feels like she's young. Like, she might just be like, maybe she, her life, I mean, because I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to put shade on sex work. But like, she has a pimp. He does seem like he's kind of a violent psychopath. Like, I have a hard time believing people would just, like, willingly go into this particular type of situation. Mm-hmm. And she's young and, like, you know, you got the idea maybe she's hit the skids and she's doing. So it's like all of, like, my rooting, like, interest is for her and not Tom Cruise.
Gotcha.
And it never, because of that, it never felt like, you know, he is a legal adult. He is dumb as a box of rocks. But she's, like, you know, like none of the advantages and privileges he has. She has, so it always feels like she's punching up.
Yeah, for sure.
And just, you know, kind of working him, which is her job, so.
And that's why I say, like, the surprising places that this movie goes with, like, him getting into the sex work business, essentially becoming a pimp and her becoming a madam and, like, taking it upon themselves to do all this stuff. That's what kept me watching this movie. Well, that and the fact that I had to podcast about it the next day. But that's what would have kept me interested in this movie had I not had that qualification. I think that stuff works well enough and it's surprising and fun enough that this isn't a bad movie. It's just, it doesn't do the great things that I see other movies of this same genre even.
And I also wonder how well it'll hold up on a second watch too, because like the way he treats the school nurse... like grabbing her like it's like
the gentlest, limpest collar grab I've ever seen, but yes, it's still a collar grab, right?
And especially since he's like, well, I'm gonna lose literally everything, but that not no you just bumblefuck through life and wind up in even a better position, and yet this school nurse who's probably making $17,000 a year, you're like trying to roll tough on. Now, to her credit, she doesn't give a shit, but still,
it's a movie where the protagonist feels like his world is crumbling, and feels like his future is slipping out from his grasp every second. Mm-hmm. And yet we know that it's not, because we know his parents are rich and well-connected and he's going to bumblefuck his way into something no matter what.
Yeah.
Or even if he doesn't, he can live off his parents' inheritance for the rest of his life, never have to lift a finger. Right. Who gives a shit?
Right. And nothing.
I'm not concerned for this kid, but.
Yeah. All these things, but like he tries to big time Joey Pants, like kind of like threaten or, you know, like act like he, like some of this stuff. It just, I felt like you're right. And it is a comedy, so I don't know how much consequences I really want. But I thought what this was going to be is that this kid hits the skids, and but he ends up landing in a kind of like a shadowy, more shabby, disreputable version of his life, where he is like loosely connected in this world of like pimps and drug dealers, call girls. But instead, he got the best of both worlds. He gets to have this one-time kind of fun. They kind of imply, don't they imply that he puts himself through college with this stuff too? Like,
I mean, he gets himself into college with this.
And so also,
it paid off.
Here's another creative choice I hated. Hmm. And this is maybe an 80s thing, but the voiceovers. Like Tom Cruise's self-important like voiceover at the
very
end.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this was a kind of a Breakfast Club kind of thing too, where it's like, what is with these naive, dumb assholes saying these big, important things like that had nothing to do with the theme of the movie? Maybe it's supposed to be funny, like in a diluted kind of satirical look at how Tom Cruise, like, all the shit you went through and you dodged every raindrop and took advantage and you're still, you act like this is like something that's kind of turned you cynical or whatever. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
Or that you did, like you got by on your own wits and bravado and you brought yourself through this by your bootstraps as opposed to just barely missing the bullet every time. I don't know that last speech really bothers me because it doesn't seem like he's learned a damn thing.
No.
He says, I deal in human fulfillment. I made $8,000 last semester. And this is right after you see the other future entrepreneurs getting up on stage and saying, we built this thing and we made $500 last semester. Because we made
what a high school's business thing would do, you know?
Right. It's a good amount of money for the small project like this, but it's not life changing. Neither is $8,000, but $8,000 is an order of magnitude more than the people who put in the real work, right?
Yeah.
And then just accidentally stumble into something stupid. Mm. That's what I felt like this movie was saying, is that like I did all this stuff on my own. I made it, and look how awesome I am. That it feels like a Wall Street sentimentality, like a capital pro unfettered capitalism mentality.
Oh, you know what? So I read that, and I couldn't find like the details about it, but there was a one off statement in I think the IMDb article or maybe it's a Wikipedia article on Paul Brickman, where he was angry that the studio made him compromise the ending. I wonder if the original screenplay had him getting some kind of comeuppance.
That would change the ending entirely.
Because it like, felt like the whole movie's just building up to that, right?
If he loses a bunch of stuff and he's oblivious to it, yes, it makes a hell of a lot more sense as a satire.
Yes.
This just makes it feel like it's the movie's thesis.
Like, there were I don't know.
Have fun,
like,
don't give a fuck, and fumble your way through life, and it'll all come out in the wash.
And if I'm a 16-year-old boy, maybe I am bummed that Joel gets worked and he gets taken advantage of, and it makes me feel kind of like dumb and silly. But like, also, maybe that would be a decent lesson to teach some young men in the 80s, because
you fuck around and find out, right? Instead of say what the fuck and come out fine.
Right. You know, maybe you should be a little bit less confident in yourself and you know, when you got a guy like Tom Cruise here.
I mean, he needed some confidence, but where he comes out in the end feels entirely unearned.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the ending that really bugs me, because I think Tom Cruise is really not charming, but very good at playing like this kid, you know, who has got some kind of like appeal and some kind of charm, but like it's very you know, undeveloped and unpolished and raw, and he's very naive, and he's very earnest, and I think he did a really good job. And some of the things I've not seen Tom Cruise be this funny. Like I said, that him trying to keep the Porsche from going into the lake was hilarious.
Yeah.
Some of his sex dreams and like how he reacted to them, I thought was really funny. Watching him get pushed around by his friends and his it's not a very Tom Cruise-y role, right?
It's not, no.
Guy's like, he's just kind of losing, getting his ass kicked all
naive,
movie.
Naive, nerd, not attractive.
Did you tell me that like Tom Hanks was considered for this role?
A lot of people were, yeah. Gary Sinise. Tom Hanks is maybe... Oh. Even better than Tom Cruise in this.
This feels like a Tom Hanks. This is the kind of like this is like the bachelor party. This is like this is sort of like Big.
The money pit. I could believe if you put the character from Big in this movie, he'd be this stupid, this naive because he's an 8-year-old kid.
Yeah, yeah.
He might not microwave the thing before he tries to stick it in his mouth.
Yeah, very few films where Tom Cruise feels like vulnerable or one down. Like
like he wasn't born with all the advantages.
Yeah,
right?
Like they play around with that a little bit in Vanilla. Sky, definitely in Magnolia, but like this is the kind of like flashes of that cruise that like not playing megawatt, everything's going his way, everything's easy, he's a Superman, and I like that. Also, I haven't seen a lot of Rebecca De Mornay stuff.
Me either.
And I thought she was really good playing a role that had to be difficult, especially at the time, like playing this older woman who is taking advantage of the younger guy and
still young, older woman.
But
still like smokingly attractive.
Sure. But she's got a lot more. And she knows
there's more to it than just that.
Especially if you think that this is her and Joey Pants tag teaming him, like definitely a level of sophistication that Joel had no counter for.
No, for sure. I want to talk about some more of the unbelievable things.
Okay.
This movie. Cause there are a few, there's a scene where Tom Cruise calls up Lana for the first time and he's waiting on the couch. It's late at night. He falls asleep waiting for her and she comes and knocks, or she's just kind of in the house when he wakes up. Mm-hmm. Let me paint a picture for you. You're a 17-year-old kid, in this case, 19-year-old, either way, you're a virgin.
Yes.
You are on the cusp of having sex. You know that the person who's going to have sex with you is on the way to the house. How many hours can you stay awake? How long is your attention span?
Yeah, I imagine it'd be like trying to go to sleep before, as a 6-year-old before Christmas, you know, like
exactly.
You're just vibrating with anticipation, nervousness,
right?
Fear, excitement.
Everyone who's been in this situation and is probably pretty close to everyone feels it.
Yeah,
just immediately you can recall
like
that
Phil
moment.
Collins, you can feel it. In the air tonight.
Absolutely, and that air keeps you awake.
Yeah.
But Tom Cruise falls the fuck asleep in like 2 hours.
Where I thought we were coming into a fantasy sequence again. And it does It does blur that line in the cinematography stuff, which is probably the thing I think is funny. Because like, part of the thing that is funny about the engine of this is just like how kind of pathetic, horny adolescent men are.
Totally.
Like we like
he understands it, that
you are
except in the scene where he falls asleep.
There's many men that just are completely led around by how desperately they need to get it in. You know, not me, of course.
Never me, of course.
These other poor sons of bitches.
Yeah,
can't control.
Oh,
himself.
The tragedy.
Yeah, it is. But I think Roger Ebert wrote that too. It's like there's just like something quintessentially pathetic that you have to laugh at these situations because, you know, what else are you going to do?
I've got another unrealistic thing.
Yeah.
And it's near it's the climax of the movie where his parents are coming home. He has had all of his furniture completely cleared out of the house. The house is empty. Joey Pants took it all while he was having sex on a train.
Yep.
And Joey Pants is selling his furniture back to Tom Cruise so that he can repopulate the house with antiques. Mm-hmm. As someone who literally yesterday spent 6 hours moving a 2-bedroom apartment, uh-huh, I can tell you for a fact that no one could fill this. I don't care how many movers,
young and strapping they are. How many boogers come over to help, yeah.
Bronson Pinchot is not getting the job done. You do not have enough time to fill that house back up.
I did think it was funny because they implied like every scene they show back more and more that the boys who were in on the sex heist are in on the cover up.
Sure.
Because you get the idea like I think like Tom Cruise is just going around like calling in favors, like calling in his banners. Uh-huh. Like, you got,
as he should.
Yeah, because, like, you know, what, you want your parents to find out about this? Because I ain't going down. So, like, it's funny, like, the more and more boys that showed up to start helping. But, like, yeah, there's no, like, they established at the start of the Joey Pants that he's got 2 hours.
And it's impossible.
How long did it take him to drive the truck over there? How long did it take? And obviously, that's the thing that he's...
This whole run around with buying your stuff back.
Yeah,
from
he's just,
him,
I mean, that's like... the fucking with them. Like, you know, And that's the other thing. It's like it took him exactly how much money he had to buy his parents' shit back, except for he...
Yeah.
That's other... I thought it was really funny that he ends up exactly the same position that he was, where he thought it was his life was going to be over, that, like, oh, he owes money on this egg.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things. Like, I guess now that I've thought about it, it does... If I was Paul Brickman, and if your ending was even... was anything but this one, and the studio, like, you know what? People like Joel. They want him to win. I could see being fucking livid.
Yeah.
Because the movie is got something.
There's something there if it just hits harder in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It is very sexy. It's got a killer soundtrack. I thought some of the situations are clever. It moves pretty. It's a... out like an hour 35, I think. Like it moves briskly. It just, yeah, it felt like it was building up to something. And maybe that's why voiceover seemed completely out of place, is that, like, you know, they had to kind of shoot around and, like, give this a positive spin and, like, just get Tom Cruise doing voiceover work, because it didn't feel that's like it thing. Earned that ending at all.
And they do such a good job at the beginning, I thought, setting up how he is risking ruin by chasing women and money, right? Like, the only things he cares about are women and money, and he doesn't have either.
It's risky business.
And then the movie gives him both at the end. I feel like if this movie had taken either or both of those things away from him, if they had shown, like, hey, you actually did fuck up your chance to go to an Ivy League school by chasing this woman and saying, what the fuck, that would have been more... I don't know, to my taste, certainly.
This movie is called Risky Business, but it comes off as, like, Certificate of Deposit, because it just feels like the safe, you know, like, this is the safest. Sure, yeah. Like, there's no way you can lose, kid.
Yeah.
You know, unless the United States government goes bankrupt, you're going to get your 1.5%, all right?
Right. Compounded over X amount of years, that'll do you.
Yeah. What else do we have to talk about?
We always talk about Tom Cruise sprinting in his movies, and there's a pretty good one here when he sprints to get to that test. Boy, he really moves up to the schoolhouse door.
Early Tom Cruise running work,
For sure. You can see the genesis of his sprinting reputation, but then also he sprints on a bike. I don't think I've ever seen anyone ride a bike this fast or this furious. That was pretty impressive.
God, that was a hilarious Bronson. Is he the one that Cousin Bucky, the one that roasted him, where he's like, said, "Nah, you walked home and jerked off." And then Tom Cruise is like, and he said, "What was it?" It's something like, "Oh, you really?" And he's like, "Oh no, wait, you were on your bike? Oh no, you biked home and jerked off."
Yeah, yeah. That was a great joke.
Oh, that was so good.
The other unrealistic thing. So he's soaked to the bone after that sprinting bike ride, right? He goes, he sprints on the bike. He goes up like 10 flights of stairs. He sees Lana. He gives her the wettest, nastiest hug in the history of nasty hugs. And then when his parents are coming home, he spends what must be just an insane 2 hours moving furniture in with Bronson Pinchot. It doesn't sweat a drop during that. Not a single damn drop. Ends up like he's freshly showered on his parents' couch with dry hair, perfectly coiffed. Yeah, pretty unrealistic.
That's the kind of control you have over your body when you're operating feet in level of 8. You know, like that's the Scientology training.
Just turn the sweat on or
early,
off.
Yeah, early Scientology training coming in clutch.
For sure.
It is funny saying, because we talk about how, like, ageless this guy is, but seeing him, like, this young.
Yeah, he looks young.
And, like, before he had, because he's had some work done, most noticeably with this thing, you know, is like he had a little bit of a snaggletooth situation that he's Invisaligned away. But
yeah,
it is interesting to see, like, pre-megastar Tom Hanks, or not Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, and where he goes from here to, like, you know, his Mission Impossible stuff. What else you got?
I think it's it.
Okay.
I had fun with this movie, but
I did too.
It's not my favorite.
Nah, it's a confection, and it is. Like I wonder if there's a director's cut that has more of the original, because I kinda wanna tear in. I ran out of time researching it. I want to look more into that, because like I said, I think this movie would be this movie got so much positive reviews. 4-star review by Ebert, and to me, wow. this is like a 3-star movie that could be a 4-star with a better ending.
Yep.
So the next movie was selected by our patron executive producers as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. This is the 2011 David Fincher version.
Yeah.
And we're doing a special thing. We've been doing the executive producers pick for a while. We've had a couple second place finishes by movies. So we're going to do a last chance roundup. If you're a patron executive producer, the movies you have to vote on for prestige movie of the week include... Not include, this is the sum set list. Wall Street, My Girl, Twister, and Lincoln. Four very different movies from very different eras. I would be tickled pink to do either of them. So if you are a patron, now's the time to go to patreon.com.
If you're an executive producer, patron,
now's the time to go to patreon.com/baldmove and make your voice heard. And then we'll be back in a couple weeks to cover whichever of the movies we've won. But next week, we'll be back with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you on the next one. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.